Facebook announced this month that it's launching its own cryptocurrency, the Libra, in 2020. It will be the latest in the hundreds of different currencies that have been used in the U.S. throughout its history. Yes, hundreds. For a look back at that, we're joined by historians Brian Ballow and Joanne Freeman, hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jeremy. Good to be here.
So let's go back to the beginning, Joanne, to understand how we got to a place where we now have a currency named after a zodiac sign and based on a blockchain. Tell us about the earliest days of money in the United States.
Which definitely didn't have much to do with the zodiac sign, right?
Right.
Well, in the earliest years of the United States, there actually really wasn't a single uniform currency. So you had all kinds of currencies floating around at that point. You had private banks producing currency. You had people using foreign currency in the United States. And in 1792, the Coinage Act was really the first legislative attempt to create a mint and create some kind of a uniform national currency for the new nation. But that, even that, was still coins. So it was copper and silver and gold coins were what was being produced at that mint. Private banks, even when that happened, are still producing currency. In 1830, there were actually roughly 300 banks issuing their own currency. So there was a lot of complication between all of the different kinds of money floating around. And not surprisingly, one of the outcomes of that was it was very easy for counterfeiters to have a pretty hefty business going in this whole time period. And what counterfeiters knew, which I think it's easy to forget, is that as long as someone has confidence that the bill they're being handed is real, even if it's fake, that bill, at least for that moment, has value. So money is really about confidence in the bill that you're being given, and counterfeiters took full advantage of that.
And Brian, the currency was initially backed by both gold and silver. Later, the country just went with the gold standard. Why?
Well, that was called bimetallism. Having a ratio between the value of gold currency and the value of silver currency. And that ratio was set at 10 to 1. And it seemed to work out pretty well until something called the gold rush happened. You may remember that, Jeremy. And because there was so much more gold that flooded the market, those currencies that were valued in gold really became very inflated. In other words, they weren't really worth as much compared to silver. Fortunately for the stability of gold, but not so good for debtors, the amount of gold in the world began to stabilize by the second half of the 19th century. And in fact, it was silver that was very available. It was very available in part because countries were not using it as much to back their currency.
Brian, not only do I remember the gold rush, I also was in a play when I was like 6 years old where one of the songs was, "There's gold in the mountains of California."
Do you want to sing
that?
Still
remember that?
Do you want to sing that for us, Jeremy?
No, hopefully there are no tapes of that. But let's talk, Joanne, about when we first got paper money in the United States. When did that happen?
Right. Well, so the Civil War era really marked the start of U.S. government-issued paper currency, both for the U.S. government in the North and the Confederacy in the South. Now, both North and South, they didn't really have the gold and silver necessary to wage a war, which was obviously really expensive. So in both cases, both governments turned to paper money to fund the war effort. Now, in the North, these were called greenbacks. Supposedly, as I said, backed by precious metals. But in reality, more than anything else, kind of like I suggested before, more than anything else, the value of these currencies was based on confidence in the future of the governments that were issuing them. Now, the important thing to note about paper currency in the North and the South, of course, is that in the North, the Union was using greenbacks as legal tender. It was official currency. And so it was regulated in some way, whereas in the South, paper currency was being produced by individual states. It wasn't really regulated. There was amazing inflation, and it really ended up hurting both the Southern economy and morale.
Now, during the Great Depression, Franklin Delano Roosevelt took the U.S. off the gold standard. Why?
Well, the most proximate reason was what Great Britain did. They went off the gold standard, and that really shattered confidence, exactly the point that Joanne was talking about. It shattered confidence in currencies that were backed by gold. And for the United States to continue to redeem its dollars in gold meant that everybody who was now worried that they weren't going to get paid in dollars that were worth anything started going to the U.S. Treasury to say, give me my gold. So Roosevelt was really forced to take the country off the gold standard, although he only did it for U.S. citizens. He didn't do it vis-a-vis other countries. Other countries could still go to the U.S. Treasury and redeem their dollars in gold. He didn't want to undermine the entire international trading system, but he did want to stop the run on the banks in the United States. He also did something that was very important for future monetary policy. He wanted to have some control over just how much that dollar was worth. And he knew that if he went off the gold standard, it would not be worth as much. And he wanted that. He wanted to reinflate the currency, because the major problem with the currency during the Great Depression was deflation. There was no demand. He wanted to stimulate that demand by putting more dollars, even if they weren't really worth as much, in people's pockets so that they could buy things and get that economy going again.
And by doing that, by taking the U.S. off of the gold standard, he ushered in the current system of fiat money. This is basically just paper money. But explain how this works. Why does a dollar in my wallet have value, but a piece of monopoly money does not?
Well, fiat money, like other currencies, depends on trust. But in the case of fiat money, you are trusting the entity that is issuing that money. And just to be bipartisan, Richard Nixon in the early 1970s finished the job. He stopped redeeming dollars for gold
for anybody,
for foreign countries, for anybody. And that really did create a fiat currency, meaning that the dollar was not backed by any kind of precious metal for anybody.
Well, and when you talk about confidence, that sort of brings us to where we are today, which is the rise of Bitcoin, the rise of other cryptocurrencies, and now the possible rise of Libra, the Facebook cryptocurrency. Is this about people not trusting the government with their money?
Yeah, it's about not trusting the government. But here's what we do trust. We do trust a technology called blockchain technology that in essence distributes the record of everything you do on these cryptocurrencies to thousands of different partners, meaning computers. So you would have to fool a whole bunch of people independently in order to rig the Bitcoin system. At least that's what Bitcoin thinks.
And, you know, what Brian just said there brings us right back to the Libra currency, which, you know, like every other form of currency, what happens to it is going to depend on the confidence that people have in it as a form of currency. And that's going to boil down to what kind of confidence people have in Facebook.
Which, as we know, is astronomical right now, given the privacy scandals and everything else.
Oh,
everyone
yeah.
has full confidence in Facebook's
well,
ability.
Well, see, Jeremy, this is the deepest irony of all. Who would you trust to be like totally hands off and not try to rig the system at all? I mean, the whole thing about cryptocurrencies is that nobody is in control. It's distributed. Do you think someone's in control at Facebook? Do you think it's like a gigantic corporation? I think so. It's almost the opposite of the ideal behind the original idea for a cryptocurrency, which is a kind of techno-libertarian, we don't need organization, we don't need bureaucracy, we definitely don't need government. We can just distribute all this information. It, in essence, checks itself. It doesn't sound like Facebook to me.
Well, let's see what happens with Libra. Brian Ballow and Joanne Freeman, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory, thanks to both of you.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you, Jeremy.